Hey there, we're back again. Thanks for staying with us. My name is Seth Juarez. We're here in the Moscone Center in San Francisco, California. This is Build 2016, and I've got some good friends with me to talk about some data stuff.
Data stuff.
I love data stuff. So why don't you introduce yourselves,
okay,
who you are, and what you do.
I'm Lara Rebelke. I'm a principal software engineer in the DX organization, mm-hmm. and I work with partners, help them get up and running on Azure, mainly end-to-end applications.
So, fantastic. Yeah. And you, sir?
I'm Matt Winkler. I'm a group program manager on the big data team, and I focus on our data lake services, in particular data lake analytics.
All right, so let's talk about, because we have an expert here on how to get partners on to these kinds of things. When do we start to do, like, hey, you know, you need to start thinking about using big data kind of stuff? Because people usually tell me, like, hey, Seth, I do big data, and their database is like 2 gigs, right? Right? No, you're kind of medium to small. When do we start to need, like, these services that Matt provides?
And I think in that case, you know, they got 2 gig or 200 gig or 2 terabytes or 2 petabytes. I mean, it's really around the analytics. And the question they're probably leading up to is, how can I get deeper analytics or different kinds of analytics, something that's a little bit more telling out of that data? I don't know if you've run into...
The definition I like to use is, it's big if you have to think about how you want to store it or process it.
Okay.
Right? Like, yeah. If it's... You know, if I can just pull it all into RAM and write a Python script on it, it's not big. But if I have to start worrying about, hey, how am I going to shard this across multiple nodes? How am I going to distribute computing this thing on multiple nodes? Then it's big.
So let's talk a little bit at some of the applications. Obviously, you're not going to name names, but why don't you tell us about some of the experiences that people have had moving their data into the cloud? For people that are maybe interested in doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the partners that I'm working with, it's less about moving their data in the cloud, it's more about their data's being born in the cloud. So
a lot
of the work that I do is with partners building their SaaS applications or the next generation of their ISV application, and it's a cloud-born application at that point. So it's less often that I see that they're gonna lift and shift or move something off of an on-prem situation. And when the data's born in the cloud, you have a lot more opportunities.
Right.
Take advantage of these server-based approach to design your application, and that's when things get really interesting, because on-prem, it's a lot more onerous, a lot more challenging to build out these big data systems with multiple nodes. It's a big, giant expense of hardware to install Hadoop across lots of different machines, and you may not even know if that's the right service and to process your data in that way. Where in Azure, and you can just say, well, just give me an HD Insight cluster, which is Apache Hadoop running on Azure, and you have that in 10 minutes, and you can start just doing your development. So it's less about the configuration of the machines, installation of the machines. You can just start building out your application that way. We have a lot of really great partners. We talked about one of them in the keynote this morning. That's Milliman. They do a fantastic processing. I think you've worked with Milliman as well. And they're an actuarial company. And they basically process data for a living. That's their secret sauce, is how they process data for actuarial analytics. And their processing takes days and days and days. But they can just spin up tens and to hundreds of thousands of cores to process the data, whether it's using Azure Batch, HD Insight. They do orchestration of the services using Azure Data Factory to spin things up and spin them down and make sure the data's moving and landing in the right place. And then it ends up back in the customer's workspace where they can look at it with Power BI. So those are like I said, a lot of times it's the data that's born in the cloud. It's less about that gravity of data moving from one place to another.
And I'm seeing, and like with the stuff, because we've known each other for a long time,
it has been a long time.
I know, right? It feels like there is so much choice. It feels like, okay, I have all this data. Oh, man, should I use the fly swatter? Should I use the shotgun? Should I use this thing? How do you get started with, okay, I know I have all this data that was born in the cloud. How do I start working with it?
Yeah, and that goes back to, what do you want to do with it? And if you look across kind of all the animals in the zoo of the different big data technologies, they tend to fall in a couple of different camps. There's a code-based camp, which is really great if you're coming from a developer background. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of control, because all you have to do is write more code. And that's one approach. There's a lot of times we see customers that are doing data warehousing, but just bigger, or they want to do it at a lower price point with
sure.
possibly a little bit more latency. And so then, you know, you're picking a tool that's going to let you write SQL because, you know, everybody in your company knows
yep.
how to write SQL, and that's a very logical thing to go do. But then, you know, then it takes also to the, what are the skills of the folks you have on your team? Are they Java developers? Are they Scala developers? Are they Python? Are they .NET? And that can also help you kind of winnow down the set of choices. But ultimately, there's not one tool to rule them all.
Right. Right?
They're yeah. like, you're going to have lots of these different tools, and they all serve a slightly different purpose.
Is there like a nice flow chart, you know? Like, like is it after well, five? No, go
yeah.
home. Is it before five? Yes, go home. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm trying to
yeah.
figure out, like, if, is there like a path that we... Because obviously what would happen is you would go into this
yeah.
organization and be like, okay, so what are you doing? What questions do you want your data answered? How do you want these questions answered, visualized, do whatever? And then you start
yeah.
to prescribe exactly what it is that you need. Is there a way for us dullards?
And it all becomes actually very clear once you start to understand, you know, where the data sits to start and what they're trying to do with it and or
yeah.
accomplish with the data. You know, I don't know, it just all synthesizes.
I think also... you really have people who kind of come at it with different problems,
yeah.
right? Sometimes you'll have folks from a traditional database background. They're going to gravitate towards one of the SQL tools like Hive,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's familiar, it's SQL. They're going to do exactly what they're doing before. You have other folks who will come in, and they know up front that they're going to do machine learning. They're going to be doing predictive analytics. They're going to be doing graph processing. And you know, those are all things which, for as much as we love SQL, they're not really... cleanly expressed select from where.
Right.
Right? And so you're going to pick a different tool for that. And so, you know, most of the times people will start a big data project, they're going to have one use case in mind. They want to do data prep, they want to do data curation, they want to do ETL into their data warehouse, they want to do machine learning. And that use case is going to, that's going to be the first thing that's going to winnow down your tool set. And then it gets into exactly what are you going to do and the skills that you've got.
And there will not be one tool.
Yeah.
Going back to Milliman, I mean, they process that data using a multitude of tools, a multitude of services.
Sure.
That's, again, the beautiful thing of cloud-based data analytics. You can just mix and match the services to your heart's content. And we see that with your common patterns where you might take the data and, as you heard, you know, curate the data using things like HT Insight Batch Process, curate it, bring data from multiple sources. That data might land into another destination. Sometimes it's a relational engine, mm-hmm. an Azure Data Warehouse or an Azure SQL Database or some other destination because of the way that you want to access that data. But there's rarely one tool that you'll use for your data application.
So let's get into a real life scenario that I'm going to make up.
All right.
Yeah. Awesome.
So very real.
Yeah, so very real.
Okay.
Is it Fabricam or is it Contoso?
I bought stock in Fabricam this morning because
okay.
of your good analysis.
I shorted Contoso.
Fabricam aircraft.
That's
yes, right.
And so what I'm trying to say is, imagine you have a point of sales application where you're a store and you know person X bought thing Y and you want to be able to, I mean, what kind of questions would you ask me as like, hey, I want to be able to analyze my data? You would come to me and say, okay, Seth, show me the data you have. Well, I have people and things that they've bought, and then I have inventory counts, and I have like over the last year what I sold. What would be the first thing that you would say to me? Okay, Seth, you want to do big data and you have a lot of data, where would you start?
What is the problem you want to solve? Do you want to understand your customers better? Do you want to predict inventory shortages? What do you want to do?
I want to sell more stuff without
okay.
running out of stuff.
Great.
Right? I mean, do you see what I'm saying? And so let's just pretend that we're
yeah.
doing that.
And well, that's where it gets interesting, right? Because there's sometimes, we'll run into some people who are like, yes, I know I need 3 Hadoops, and now
and
what am I going to go do with
them?
With
a side of fries with
yeah.
that, please.
Yes.
But then it's like, oh, what am I going to go do? Like, a Hadoop cluster doesn't do anything
without you telling it to.
Right. So like
right.
you have to have this kind of, you know, problem in mind. And so if you take, hey, I want to sell more stuff. So typically that'll get into a pattern where we want to understand our customer better.
Sure.
And so what we want to be able to do is take that data. We want to be able to segment our customers. We want to be able to find customers that are similar to them, mm-hmm. either in terms of demographic information or similar purchasing patterns, you know, and then I can do things like, oh, based on kind of all of that, I know that someone in this category is very likely to buy X. Let me send you a 10% off coupon for X, right? And so that's going to be one way you can increase engagement. And so then what are you going to do? Well, you're probably going to have some work that you're going to do to categorize your customers. And there's, you know, a bunch of different machine learning classification algorithms you can run on that. So you're going to have to shape your data so that it can go into those, right? And then you're going to get the output of that, and you're going to start to, you know, probably move that into a database that's powering your application.
And that's,
I need a whiteboard.
Yeah, I know. We're like whiteboarding.
Just start drawing.
And learn, and go back. And as you process that data, you're going to learn more about what worked, what didn't work. You're going, and that's the whole process of machine learning. It's going to iterate around.
I like that. So we're going to continue with my fake example, but I want to tell you, if you're watching, if you have a real example, we have some pretty good experts here that are going to give you at least 19 more minutes of super awesome good advice. But I'm going to continue with my fake example and say, the first thing that I noticed that you did with me as this owner of this application or this store is you said, what question do you want your data to answer?
Yep.
And I think that's what I was getting, right?
Right.
That's
what
I was getting at. And once you know the question, then that will dictate a lot of the stuff that you do thereafter.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment?
And
absolutely.
You will make decisions to answer those questions. And you will have different questions that you may want to answer that may be solved with that same platform or same set of tools in your tool set. Or
maybe.
You might bring other tools from other tool sets to answer questions in the future that stem from the answers that you get from those questions. Wow, that just kind of went around and around. But and that's, again, the whole beauty of being able to just, you know, compose these services together and say, right now, these are the questions I know I need to answer, and I'm going to use HD Insight, Hadoop, or I'm going to go
or
use
something
Spark,
else.
Or I'm
going to,
yep.
I like that. And so I love the okay, start with a question.
Yeah.
And then it feels like after that we have to say, do we even have the data to support the answers to those questions?
Yeah.
Right.
Or if we do, where is it?
Or
and what shape do we have?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the shape is an important one. There's a lot of work that happens in big data systems, which is really about getting the data in the right shape. That could be moving from, you know, deeply nested structures into rectangles that you want to go load into a relational store.
Right.
Or it could be shaping it in whatever way your machine learning algorithm is going to take it in. Mm-hmm.
That's the data curation that he mentioned earlier.
Okay, so it feels like we have the question. Once we know what question we have, we look around, see what our data is, and then we start to decide, okay, is it in the right shape to get the answer? Or do we get into, like, for example, we saw some stuff with Power BI that was introduced. Do I have to shape it to get it into a certain representation to see it visualized in a specific way?
Yeah, I mean, this is something, it's a nice self-reinforcing cycle when it gets going, because you don't know what you don't know. And oftentimes people will start off with a problem like that, or they'll start off with, hey, I've got a bunch of machine data and I don't want to put it all in my warehouse, so I'm just going to aggregate it down.
Sure.
But then you do want to use tools because you want to understand the data better, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where we'll see people bring in visualization technology, because they're trying to understand the data and say, hey, what are the interesting columns? What are the interesting patterns? And so, you know, there is an exploration phase, and sometimes visualization tools are very helpful for that, and sometimes tools like R or Python are very, very helpful for that.
And I always love R because you can sound like a pirate. All right, we'll go to the question here. Sam Henry says, how does a SQL developer get into big data? It just seems like it's hard to find a natural path into it for us more traditional developers.
Yeah.
What say you?
It's a great question. You know, I think there are a couple of things you have to separate out. From a developer experience perspective, I think that somebody can be a SQL developer can pretty easily get into big data. If everything's set up and all you have to do is say, hey, rather than using, you know, SSDT to submit your queries, you're gonna go use this web app or this other application to submit your queries.
Sure.
The SQL's pretty much the same in that case. And so things like Hive and Impala and Spark SQL, those are all things where anybody who can write a SQL statement, in the next 15 minutes, we could have them up and running on big data. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the challenge people run into is, how do I actually get an environment where I can go do this? How do I get that environment where I have my data? You know, and that's where it's really nice to be able to walk up to the cloud and say, hey, click, 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 please deploy a 100-node Hadoop cluster. You know, or in the case of Data Lake Analytics, you can walk up to Azure and just say, hey, please go run this job. And you know, just kind of like Mark was talking in the last 30 minutes about the Azure Functions stuff, it's very similar to you only pay for what you use. So just walk up, run this job.
And that's good. So it feels like, okay, so we start with a question, we look around to what data we have, we get into the shaping of the data, and then after that, it feels like we can use analysis to even find out if our data is relevant. Is that, would you say that that's an interim step to getting into the other more sophisticated analysis, or is that the analysis? You see what I'm asking?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times that type of work, you have to do just to understand the data. And,
right.
You know, if you take machine logs as a really great example, you know, you're going to want to understand the statistical distribution of all of the values. One, because you just want to understand the data. But two, at some point, you're probably going to say, hey, if I get a reading that's, you know, 6 standard deviations away from the mean, that's probably a bad reading.
Right.
It's not that, you know, my wind turbine is measuring 1.5 million degrees.
Right.
It's probably a bad record. And so what you'll kind of start doing is, and this is where that cycle comes in, you'll kind of learn something. You'll then say, okay, great. As I curate my data, as I clean my data, I now want to cleanse it. And I want to say, hey, eliminate these bad rows, mm-hmm. For instance.
Data in its raw form often is dirty.
Yeah.
It needs to go through that cleansing process.
Yeah, Jim's
and
always
so,
putting names in the age field and stuff
yep,
like that,
and
right?
So you need to put it in a real consistent format.
Right.
And the keeping data as it's born and putting it into a system that you can just process it from its raw, the way that it was first created, mm-hmm. there's a lot of advantage to that, but there's a lot of work to it as well to get it into a state when you can do a consistent level of analysis, and that's that curation phase. And once you get that data into a nice, consistent, and predictable format, it does lend itself to being able to do better analytics. But you can still keep the raw form because there might be other lessons you can learn from the data, even
right.
in its original dirty state.
Because you might be losing information as you're cleaning.
You lose fidelity.
Yeah.
You lose fidelity, and a colleague of ours, that he's actually speaking on this topic tomorrow, it's at 10:30, applying, you know, but I don't remember what the exact title is, it's Azure Data Warehouse and Azure Data Lake, applying modern these practices to your modern app, or something like mm-hmm. that, 10:30 Pacific time, tune in.
Yes, of course.
Anyway, but, you know, he always talked about how, you know, when you move the data and you put it into the relational, back in the olden days when you didn't have these options, you always put them into a database because that's what you had.
Right.
Right? That was your one tool. So you would have a defined structure. This is my schema, and these are the columns I'm going to choose to keep.
Uh-huh.
These are the data types of the columns, and I'm going to force that data into that structure.
Right.
But you lose things.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, he once said, you know, stuff falls on the floor. You lose information on the floor. Well, you can keep the data in its raw form, still
just lying around.
Query on it, curate it, but keep that raw data. And then you may still keep put that data in some optimized form as
right.
well, and into, you know, more of that, as you mentioned, this rectangle into a structured.
So
store.
I'm learning we never want to throw away data.
No.
Yes.
No.
Pack rat.
Yeah, no, let's keep
Pack
all
rat,
of it.
Totally.
All of it. All
yeah.
right, so Mr. Rojas asked, SQL Server 2016 will basically reshape BI, DW, and analytics as we know it. How close is this new paradigm to be available in Azure?
It's going to reshape data warehouse as we know it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what he means by that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take a little bit of the question. You know, SQL 2016 is available today in Azure. You can deploy it inside of an Azure virtual machine, and you can go ahead and start using that. You know, certainly there's technologies and capabilities that we're delivering throughout SQL Database and SQL Data Warehouse as well. We'd love to understand a little bit more exactly what capabilities.
Maybe they're calling out R. The R integration
yeah.
in SQL 2016 mm. might be what is that, and that could be the case, and how close is that to where we are in Azure?
We should go find one of the SQL guys.
We should find one of the SQL
guys. Yeah,
and you are seeing R being, it's a pervasive across all of our properties at Microsoft, and you're seeing that become available throughout a lot of our services.
Absolutely.
And R is available in Azure Machine Learning as a way that you can process your data, or not process, but you can process and analyze your data. So you will see that light up more and more across all of our data properties.
All right, another question. Are there tools in Azure Big Data that can process behavioral analysis? I guess I don't know. How would you answer that? Behavioral analysis.
I think they're talking about maybe some of the quick starts or something with machine learning.
I mean, the way without, I'm not a machine learning expert. No. I don't play one on TV. But the where a lot of those types of analytic tools are surfacing is through Azure Machine Learning. Mm-hmm. There's a pretty rich library of capabilities you can use there. If you don't like any of the things that are kind of there out of the box, R is there, you can pull in whatever R modules you want. Python is there with NumPy and SciPy and all of those things, so you can pull those in. So if any of those tools can solve that problem, then you can go ahead and use those inside of Azure Machine Learning.
There are a ton of I'm trying to think of the term. It's the end of the day.
Right,
I've lost words.
Nice.
But somewhere along the line, there are some words to express what I'm trying to say. But out in Azure, there's a gallery of machine learning APIs.
Sure.
And one way that you can get started, and there are some for behavioral analysis, one way you can get started is to go try out some of these APIs for machine learning and bake it into your app. It's just a web service API call. And the machine learning models, the word I was looking for, are also available for you to Azure Machine Learning Model that you can pull down and play with it on your own and customize it. So if you go check out the Azure Machine Learning Gallery, I think is what it's called, you should be able to find lots of those good things.
I'm going to pretend that I know stuff about machine learning and answer that question. So behavior analysis is kind of an interesting thing. My question to you would be, what behavior are you trying to analyze? And what outcome are you trying to get from these models that you're building? And depending on the behavior that you're trying to do, if you're trying to find out who's similar, I would look at unsupervised models like K-means, Gaussian mixture models. If you are looking for behavior to do prediction on what people would do, I would probably look at sort of your supervised models, which are decision trees. You know, they also have neural networks in there. And you can also define the shape of your neural networks. I did not know, most people don't know that. There's a language called GraphSharp or some crazy language where you can define the actual shape of your neural networks. And in Azure ML, you can actually run many models at the same time to see how good they're doing at doing
these
kinds of predictions. And you can get sort of the curves, right? You can get all those that will tell you how good you're doing. They'll give you precision recall. They'll even give you the F score, which is the harmonic mean between them. So, my pretending is over. The question is, what behavior are you trying to model? And if you're going to do that, then I would look at those things.
Yeah.
Man, I'm such a good
pretender. That was pretty impressive.
Next question. A lot of us.
It's a good thing our host knows something about machine learning.
Maybe. A lot of us data scientists use Macs, as I do, and often the tools that Microsoft makes is for Windows only. Do you have things that work well for Mac users? This is a simple slam dunk answer, I think, right? Like, data, all of that stuff that I just said about machine learning is you go on the web and it just happens.
Right.
Right, and the APIs that you have for dumping data into Azure, or if it's already born in the cloud, it's just sort of all there already, right?
Right.
So I don't know. What do you think of that?
Seth, you're two for two. Keep going, man.
I'm slam dunk, man. End of day. I'm talking machine learning. I must be getting tired. That's awesome. So let's move on to the next question.
And just to land that home, we absolutely want to be available to every client out there. So, what you said.
What
you said.
So to finish up, and we're gonna finish up now, why don't you tell me a little bit about how someone could get started? Now that they know their question, now that they know the data they have, how do they sort of start to get into, okay, now I want to analyze this data? What are some things that you would suggest that they look at first? We'll start with you, Matt.
Yeah, so you're landing your data. It's either born in the cloud or you're ingesting it into the cloud. So let's assume you've got that taken care of. You've landed it probably in something like Blob Store or Azure Data Lake Store.
Okay.
Then when you look at the various services we've got. Two of them come to mind. One is HD Insight. The other is Data Lake Analytics.
Right.
Both of them are near and dear to my heart.
Of course.
And if you're looking to use any of the open source Apache Hadoop community of tools, so that's Hive and Pig and Spark, if you want to be able to use any of those, spin up an HD Insight cluster, point it at your data. The nice thing about those things is that they operate on top of that, so you don't have to, once you get data in Blob Store or Data Lake Store, you're good to go. And then once you get that spun up, you know, if you've spin up a Spark cluster, you're gonna get the you know, notebook experience where you can go party on that data. The other thing you can use is Data Lake Analytics, which, you know, then all you're going to do is write your job in a language called uSQL. It's kind of a nice mix between...
Which is the bomb, by the way. I just learned about it last week, and I'm like, where have you been hiding this my entire life?
Yeah, so uSQL, it's a new language for big data that we're introducing in Data Lake Analytics. Mm-hmm. It's based on something that we use inside of Microsoft called Scope that we've been using for about the last 10 years to process all of the big data inside of Microsoft. And it's a nice mix of SQL with C#. And so it allows you to be very declarative most of the time, but then when you need to go out and write, you know, code to do exactly what you want, you can do that in a language that's familiar to a lot of people.
Yeah, but it also scales it out in like really crazy ways too.
It does.
In a declarative way.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
And I was, like I said, pretending right now to know about data.
uSQL is kind of nice because you can go ahead and write that query, and then once you've written it, there's just a slider. Do you want like zero nodes, 250, 1,000? We'll give you those in about 10 to 15 seconds and just party on.
You know, when the slider control was born, it never knew its potential. Like, we use sliders to like multiply machines all over the place now, so thank goodness for sliders.
Right.
And you, Laura, why don't you tell us about how to get started?
Well, I agree with everything he's said. You know, you can, once you get your data up into Azure Storage, everything just is open up to you. I'm going to add on to that and just say that every single thing that he talked about, the Hive, the Pig, the Spark, every single one of those, there are online tutorials, and start there. I mean, just because it gets you acclimated to the syntax or to the tools, and what is a notebook, and what is this, and you know, at least introduces you to those concepts. So start there, then get your data into Azure. Just walk through some simple questions. Sometimes that data might already be coming from a relational database, and that might actually make it easier for you to figure out what you want to ask of the data, because it's already formed that way versus having to go do some curation, and then just layer on top of it. Start thinking about, okay, what can I do with Azure Data Factory to operationalize this, and how can I use some of the other tools to start building out more of that end-to-end application. So I would absolutely start as Matt was talking about, and then just kind of keep layering on top.
Well, that's awesome. This has been so much fun. I got to pretend to be a data scientist with you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us. And again, if you're watching at home, I will remind you, even though there's no keynote tomorrow, we have a full day of wonderful sessions that you can watch. Jeffrey Snover is going to open the day at 8 a.m., and then we have people from Azure IoT. We're going to talk about .NET languages with Mads, Dustin Campbell, and some other guests. Mm-hmm. We also have the Office Dev Show. We're going to talk about .NET Core, where that is. Please stay tuned. We'll see you tomorrow bright and early, 8 a.m. Thanks for watching, and have a good night. Take care.